Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. This week, we continue my interview with Jay Hess. Dr. Oliver was an early adopter of computers. In the early 80s, believe it or not, he started writing on a word processor. There were several people who helped him do that. One man actually went to Dr. Oliver's home and set up the equipment, but it was a whole group of people who had donated funds through Liberty Bell Magazine. And Liberty Bell Magazine was a National Socialist monthly magazine published out of Reedy, West Virginia, by an honorable German-American named George Dietz. And if it weren't for George Dietz, I would say that 70 to 80% of Dr. Oliver's work in the latter part of his life would never have seen the light of day. Well, George Dietz put up an appeal, and dozens, if not 100 people, contributed funds through Liberty Bell, and they bought Dr. Oliver what was then probably a very advanced system, an IBM PC. I believe he also got an Apple computer, so he'd be compatible with both operating systems, some high-resolution printers, and other peripheral equipment. And he was writing on word processors in 1983, 84, 85. And in 1985, I first became acquainted with Dr. Oliver personally, and he sent me a number of his pieces on diskettes, on floppy disks. those were the days of dial-up bulletin board systems. There really wasn't an internet available to the public at that time, but people would set up computers with modems, usually 300 or at best 1200 baud, very slow modems. You could see the writing being painted across the screen at a snail's pace as you were downloading something or trying to read something. But I put up a number of Dr. Oliver's word processor files, his articles, on a bulletin board that I operated in the Washington, D.C. area in association with the National Alliance. And so that was my early foray into the world of digital outreach. And I was very proud that Dr. Oliver's works were part of that.
Yeah, he was a remarkable man. I had never had the opportunity to meet Dr. Oliver. And I sure wish I would have made the effort. You know, when you're younger and you don't realize that people can die, you think people are going to live forever. And that's not the case.
Yeah, you're so right. I first wrote to Dr. Oliver in 1985. I read his book, of course. I joined the National Alliance. I'd read his reviews for Attack and National Vanguard. I'd read his commentary on Which Way Western Man, and I was reading him every month in Liberty Bell magazine in his column entitled Postscripts. And there was something I got in the mail. I used to like to get on crazy mailing lists back when I was in my 20s and 30s. I would call it nut material. I would try to get on the wackiest, nuttiest mailing lists I could, you know, kooky religious mailing lists, kooky flying saucer cults, things like that, just because I thought it was funny. Well, somehow or other, you know, these mailing, if you get on one mailing list, they'll sell your name to other outfits. At least that's the way it used to be. And I got this circular in the mail, beautifully printed, full color, fold out circular, from a Dr. Collett, he called himself, or Pastor Collett. I think it was Dr. Collett. And he had written a book claiming that he had gone to heaven. And in this book, he was going to tell you, you know, what Jesus looked like and what the different people you meet in heaven are like and all kinds of just what heaven looked like and where you lived, where you go, what you did to have fun. And I thought it was so funny that I sent a copy to Dr. Oliver, and that was the beginning of our acquaintanceship, our friendship. He thought it was very funny,
too. And of course, Dr. Oliver would have a very colorful description for people like that.
Oh, yes. Boob bait for suckers or something like that.
There you go. That's it, exactly.
Another thing about Dr. Oliver was that his political writings were written in a very scholarly style, although it was laced with a lot of wit and satire and irony, and they could make you roll on the floor laughing sometimes. But in addition to that, though, amidst this scholarly Augustan prose, he would stick in all kinds of epithets to insult our enemies and our competitors. It was pretty funny. I mean, it's stuff that I wouldn't use.
It was absolutely brilliant. The choice of words that he used, it wouldn't be vulgar. It would be on a very high intellectual level, his criticism of our enemies. And I noted also, Dr. Oliver liked to insert a lot of Greek and Latin phrases that were quite common amongst, Americans and most educated Englishmen 100 years ago. But Greek and Latin has fallen into disuse. Like, for instance, I know my parents, when they went to grade school, I remember my mother telling me she was taught some basic Greek and Latin grammar. And of course, that's not done at all these days in school. Now they're teaching all the many varieties of genders that you might want to become.
Well, I don't think I mentioned it, but Dr. Oliver was a professor of the classics. He also taught Spanish and Italian and Spanish and Italian literature. And he was a student of the Renaissance, medieval, and classical periods. And
not to forget Sanskrit, which must be very difficult.
Oh, yes. He had mastered Sanskrit. And his first publication was a translation of a play originally written in Sanskrit. So, yes, he's a master of many languages. Yeah, I think he could read and write 11 languages, if I remember correctly. But I'm ashamed to admit I'm a product of a modern American education. I can more or less speak English, and I think I can say I have a red pencil in French, but that's about it.
And I did appreciate how Dr. Oliver inserted some of these Greek and Latin terms in his writing, because as a scientist and a marine biologist, I have to memorize all the various scientific names of the different plants and animals. Mm. And I found out early on in my career that it would be very helpful if I knew some basic words like in Greek and Latin. And it really did help me immensely in being able to memorize scientific names.
I can imagine. Well, which is minuscule, by the way. All the Greek and Latin phrases I know, basically, I learned after I became acquainted with Dr. Oliver. He sparked my interest. So I've read books of Latin aphorisms, and I've read a few of the classics, but in translation, of course. And I have a tremendous respect for the civilization that was destroyed by the advent of the Semitic religion, Christianity, when it took over our civilization, both of the classical civilization created by our race and the northern peoples of our race. Both were conquered by the Semite spiritually. And that's another thing about Dr. Oliver. He was not a Christian. He believed that Christianity was not only untrue, but it was extremely dangerous and possibly the greatest factor in the decline of our people and our race, and might well be the end of us.
And I agree completely. I think Christianity, Semitic Christianity, poses a deadly threat to our people. And I've done a lot of reading and research on Christianity. There's one very important book that I've read entitled The Christ Myth. The Christ Myth is one of the most important books that reveals the history of Christianity, in that in all likelihood, there probably was no real Jesus Christ who existed as a historical figure. That this was all made up by Jews in the second century A.D.
Yes, was that by Nicholas Carter? I seem to recall that might be the name of the other. I remember that Dr. Oliver wrote a very long review of that book.
Well, I highly recommend anyone who's listening that has an interest in the reality of Christianity, The Christ Myth by Nicholas Carter would be the book to read.
So let me tell you a little bit about my time with Dr. Oliver. I think I only visited him four times in my life, but he was very, very kind and very gracious to a young man who certainly didn't have his educational attainments, but did have and was inspired by his loyalty to his culture and his race, and his ability to convey the spirit of our race's civilization and culture to many people, not just me, of course, but he, I think, appreciated the fact that he had changed my life. And so he was very gracious. He and his wife, Grace, both gave me a good deal of their time every time we went to visit him. We usually would stay a few days, and he was a man of tremendous energy. And I remember that at one point he had no way to view videos when VCRs came out and people were starting to share videotapes with one another. He had no way of viewing the videotapes that he had a vast correspondence that people were sending to him that they wanted him to see a certain program. Of course, there was no YouTube, there was no video on an SD card in those days. You had to send a VHS tape. Well, anyway, he had a stack of such tapes, but nothing to play them on. So I obtained a VHS VCR and a computer monitor, and I was able to, a nice color computer monitor, and I gave them as gifts to Dr. and Mrs. Oliver. And he didn't want a television. He didn't want the Jew lies being broadcast into his home directly, but he did want to be able to watch these recordings. And so I hooked the VCR up to the monitor so he could play the tapes, but it could not receive TV signals the way I had it hooked up. And he was very pleased with that. But I remember one of the recordings was recorded off the air, off Channel 7 in Washington, D.C. And I don't know if you recall it, Jay, but WJLA had a series on Dr. Pierce back in 1987, I think it was. And on one of my visits, I had hooked up the gear and he wanted to watch that, so he put it on. And of course, it's filled with scurrilous lies and hate and distortion, lots of quotes from ADL, etc. And it was so bad that Dr. Oliver was sitting next to me while we watched this, and he, as he saw the lies and the distortion being presented on the television, he started cursing under his breath. He was so emotional about the Jewish lies. Basically, he forced himself to sit through it because he wanted to watch the tape someone had sent him, and he wanted to understand what was being said, but he was really angry. That sort of thing just got to him at a visceral level, and I think that some of the inspiration for why a man in his, you know, 60s, late 60s, 70s, and even 80s and late 80s was still writing not only a monthly column, and it was more than just a column, it was really like 10 columns. Usually there would be many articles, if not booklet length pieces in Liberty Bell, why he expended so much time and so much energy for basically, you know, no monetary reward to help alert his people to their danger. And you could see when I was sitting with him that he felt very strongly about what was being done to our people.
Well, he was a great genius, and he's sorely missed by me, but fortunately we do have his works that we can read. And, you know, I've been reading his works for, you know, 40 years now, And I still come across some interesting things that I haven't read yet. So Dr. Oliver is the gift that keeps on giving, and you're the one who makes sure that happens.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay. I did promise him that I would keep his work before the public, keep it alive for new generations that were to come. That's one of the last things I said to him, and I'm trying to keep that promise.
And, you know, we all look for a purpose in this life, and just doing that one thing yourself gives you great purpose in life. And, of course, you've done many other things beside that, but that's an example of how people can contribute to eternity by works like that, by preserving great masters' works like Dr. Oliver.
Yes, thank you. I agree with you. And I'm not the only one who's doing it. There's another man who prefers that his name not be mentioned, who I know, who has been engaging in a tremendous project of preserving old books that have knowledge in them that would be considered politically incorrect today. And he has scanned in or arranged others to have scanned in thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pages of these old books. And some of them are now being made by my wife and by other people into audiobooks too. So that it's something, there's so many great works that have been tossed from the modern libraries that are never mentioned in the captured universities and in the Jewish-owned media, that basically they've been tossed into the memory hole. And so there are many people who are devoting their lives to rescuing that knowledge and that culture, that information. And in future years, it could form the kernel of a new renaissance, literally parallel in many ways to the renaissance that occurred in the 14th and 15th centuries, when classical authors were rediscovered after being brutally destroyed and suppressed by the church.
Yeah, the church was on a mission back in those days to try to physically destroy any bit of knowledge. I guess they were mostly concerned about things that were heretical, that were critical of the Catholic Church, but they went beyond that. Anything that had to do with science and mathematics was considered the works of the devil. And right now we live in a modern day era where our Jewish enemies are working overtime to try to eliminate any source of knowledge that our people have for their liberation and freedom. For instance, right now, as most people know, Silicon Valley is on a rigorous campaign to try to get rid of material, things that people have on YouTube. My good friend Don Black has always said, nothing ever dies on the internet. And I used to sort of argue with him because I suspected I've always suspected that the internet can be, I mean, it's very ethereal. I mean, it wouldn't take much for it all to disappear. So he sometimes used to criticize me because I collected all these physical books, and that's still my passion. I've got... I donated my personal library to the Dr. William Luther Pierce Library, but it's somewhat ironical now that Don Black now acknowledges that things may indeed die on the internet.
Well, you have a point. I read a study once that said that digital media do not have unlimited life, that DVD ROMs and CD ROMs, you will be lucky if the data is 80% recoverable after 100 years. And books, paper books actually last longer. I don't know about SD cards. I haven't really read up on them, but perhaps they are also subject to deterioration from cosmic rays or heat. I really don't know what the lifespan of those media are, but it's nothing is unlimited. Nothing is forever. There is one magic, though, about digital media, which you can download off the internet, and that is that it reproduces itself. So, you know, I just say make copies, make copies, make copies, make many copies, because Some of them are going to be in a basement somewhere where it's a perfect environmental conditions, and they might last 500 or 1,000 years. But, you know, keep paper books too, and print up plenty of paper books. We want our people to live, and we want them to have a renaissance someday, and the classical works of the great authors, not only of the vast pantheon of great minds of our race through the centuries, but also of the racialist thinkers like Dr. Oliver, like William Pierce, need to be preserved for generations we haven't even seen yet. And one thing I'm kind of proud of is that I've been going through the old Instauration magazine archive, and I have discovered, a lot of people don't know what Instauration magazine was. It was a pro-white magazine that was run basically by Wilmot Robertson, who wrote The Dispossessed Majority, and it existed from, I believe, 1976 until 1999 when he died. And there's a lot of good material in there. There's some material I don't agree with, but basically there's a tremendous treasure trove of wonderful racialist material in that somewhat diverse magazine. And they had a policy in Instauration of not using bylines. And maybe he was ahead of his time. He wanted his authors to be able to remain anonymous, because the Iron Curtain of Jewish smear machine was active even in the 70s, and he wanted to protect his authors. Well, Dr. Oliver, I discovered, wrote a number of articles without signing his name for Instauration. I discovered a couple of them through looking at his correspondence file and his publications file, and I discovered others just by going through the Instauration archive and seeing this, saying this article has to be written by Dr. Oliver, because nobody writes like Dr. Oliver. So,
you know what? I noticed the same thing when it comes to Instauration, which literally means renewal. And for instance, insects and crustaceans, they shed their shell and then they grow a new shell, and that's called Instauration. And each time an organism does that, that's referred to an instar, but I don't want to get too far into that.
I didn't know that.
But anyway, I did note that some articles, I'd wonder, wait a minute, that's got to be Dr. Oliver, just by the, its stylistic qualities. I'd say to myself, that has to be Dr. Oliver.
Well, quite a number of the Revelo Oliver articles that we've put up in the last 5 years on nationalvanguard.org are from Instauration and were not known to be, at least officially, by Dr. Oliver until we put them up. So if people have been reading reveloliver.com, where we have archived a great number of Oliver articles, we haven't archived there the new ones that I put up in recent years on nationalvanguard.org. So fans of Dr. Oliver should go to nationalvanguard.org and look up Dr. Oliver's name, and they will find a number of articles they probably have never seen before.
Well, you know, I wish I would have had a little bit more time to prep for this, because there are so many great quotes from Dr. Oliver that I would have liked to have read off right now, but it's kind of difficult being here in West Virginia, trying to take care of the property here, and the bulk of my library is in Tennessee, where we're building the Dr. William Luther Pierce Library. So I'm really a little bit of a loss, because I don't have my materials at hand. I have to rely on my own memory, which as I'm getting older, it's it's getting a little bit loose now.
Well, when you do get access to your material again, you should not only write an article of the best quotes of Revelo P. Oliver for National Vanguard, but you should also take those quotes and put them up on WikiQuote, which so far hasn't censored whoever it is that's been putting up Dr. Oliver quotes. There is a Dr. Revelo P. Oliver section on WikiQuote with a number of quotes, but it's only a handful. And I'm sure you could flesh it out with some real zingers, Jay.
And nobody knows better than you that he's got some really good ones.
We'll continue this important interview next time on American Dissident Voices.